Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Thursday, August 20th, 2015. Spooks and crooks have all kinds of high-tech toys at their disposal, and they operate by air, by land, and lately, more often, by sea.
The underwater boy singing, one day we'll light all down here. The underwater boys.
One of my 80s favorites from the Peter B. Collins Tax-Deductible Music Archives. It's Shriekback, and it's called The Underwater Boys. Item from July 18th. Coast Guard intercepts a crewed narco submarine in the Pacific Ocean, loaded with almost 17,000 pounds of cocaine. And this is a craft that is largely submerged. There's just a little part of it, a parapet or a conning tower, as a submariner would call it, that is above the surface. And apparently the South American drug runners have turned to these narco submarines as the new way to get their drugs over the border. And this was all news to me. I was shocked to hear about it. And this morning, I saw the latest underwater smuggling effort. A drug smuggler in scuba gear led to the discovery of a tunnel from Mexico that's partially underwater and ends in a canal. A man named Avilio Padilla pleaded guilty Wednesday in federal court in San Diego to one count of possession of drugs with intention to distribute. They say that they discovered a soaked Padilla in a wetsuit next to the All-American Canal, about 7 miles east of Calexico in California, on April 25th. And near him, they found a breathing tank with a rebreather to prevent surface bubbles and several vacuum-sealed and gift-wrapped packages that held a total of 55 pounds of cocaine. That, in turn, led to the discovery of a 150-foot-long tunnel, which began at a house in Mexicali, Mexico, and ended under the water in the canal. The drugs were put on a trolley system on the dry side in Mexico, and smugglers would use scuba gear to retrieve it from under the canal's water from an opening that's normally obscured by rocks. Wow. Now, if you think that's resourceful, how about this news from Gaza, where Hamas reports it has captured a dolphin. A dolphin flying the Israeli flag. Now, I don't know about the flag part, but the dolphin was equipped with underwater recording devices and an arrow-firing weapon. And this was intercepted off the Gaza coastline. The dolphin was spotted due to its suspicious movements while it was on a mission to gather information about a Hamas commando unit. So frogmen from Hamas went into the water and made the arrest. The detention reportedly occurred several weeks ago, but Hamas has not yet formally commented on the alleged dolphin bust. Wow. I mean, I realize that these spy agencies have a lot of money and a lot of time on their hands, and they're determined to achieve their goals. But even I am surprised by these developments. Also, in Israel yesterday, the Supreme Court did suspend the detention order against Mohammed Alon, the Palestinian who has been hunger-striking for 65 days, and so he is now technically released from the administrative detention that's being held without charge or trial on an indefinite basis. And so he's still in the hospital, but he's no longer shackled to his bed. And as I mentioned yesterday, Israel did not take this step until they confirmed that his hunger strike had caused brain damage. And I find that inhumane. Now, speaking of spying, Rocky Anderson, he's the former mayor of Salt Lake City, and he's the guy I voted for president in 2012 when he ran on the ticket of the Justice Party. And Rocky represents a lot of great progressive values. He is also an attorney, and he filed a lawsuit Tuesday in U.S. District Court against George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and others in the administration, accusing them of spying on everyone in Salt Lake City during the 2002 Olympic Winter Games. Anderson accuses the NSA and the Bush administration of blanket surveillance over everyone in Salt Lake, and at the Olympic venues from the start of the opening ceremonies until the closure 2 weeks later. The brief reads in part, "The NSA, in conjunction with the FBI, planned and implemented a mass warrantless program for which there was no probable cause, completely outside the Constitution and outside of any applicable federal statutory laws, including FISA, the Wiretap Act, and the Stored Communications Act, in which blanket surveillance was attempted and achieved during a period preceding the commencement of the 2002 Salt Lake Winter Olympic Games and throughout the period of the Games." And his plaintiffs include a former vice chair of the Utah Democratic Party, a Republican state senator, and a former member of the city council in Salt Lake City. I'll ring up Rocky Anderson and see if I can get him to comment on this for a podcast in the next week or so. Well, words have real impact. And there are a lot of people who think that when Donald Trump paints all immigrants as rapists and criminals who were sent here by the Mexican government, when he claims that the solution to our immigration problem is to build a wall on the southern border and to deny those born here of automatic citizenship, well, his hateful speech goes beyond just the entertainment value and the shock value and the ratings gains for media outlets. Yesterday, two brothers in Boston beat up a Hispanic man. And they said that they were inspired to do it by Trump's anti-immigrant comments. These two guys are charged with beating the 58-year-old man who is homeless with a metal pole, breaking his nose, battering his chest and arms. Police quoted one of the brothers, Scott Leader, age 38, "Donald Trump was right. All these illegals need to be deported." And his brother is also charged in the beating. That is Steve Leader, aged 30. The Globe reported the brothers have extensive criminal records. But here's what's even more shameful. They pissed all over the guy. They left him soaked in urine. And Donald Trump was informed of this at a news conference on Wednesday where he was busy trashing every other candidate for president. He said it was the first he'd heard of it, so we'll, you know, give him a little slack. But he said it would be a shame. "I will say that people who are following me are very passionate. They love this country. They want this country to be great again. They are passionate." Well, this is not passionate. This is a pathology. This is hate being driven into physical violence. And Donald Trump is responsible for this. And this is what hate speech does. And I know it's easy to toss it off as, you know, just hot rhetoric and he'll say anything and, you know, people don't take him seriously. But these two goons in Boston did. And how many copycats will be inspired by Donald Trump? And let's take this one step further. There are people who our government considers to be terrorists who were inspired by Anwar al-Awlaki, the American citizen that we illegally assassinated in a drone strike in Yemen a couple of years ago. We claim that Awlaki's inspiration of others was sufficient to assassinate him. Now, Donald Trump has inspired these two guys in Boston to act in this manner. And, of course, he will not be held responsible in any way. There's a very interesting op-ed in the New York Times today attributed to Stephen R. Kelly, who's described as a retired American diplomat who served in Mexico and now teaches public policy at Duke University. And I loved it because it's snarky. And most op-eds are kind of dry and boring, and, you know, there's no attempt to amuse you as you read them. So, Professor Kelly, I'm thinking he's a professor, I don't know that for sure, he says, Trump has built much of his lead on his tough stance on immigration, the centerpiece of which is the demand that America wall off its border with Mexico to stanch the flow of rapists and other undesirables. And so, Kelly says, "I have a border he should strongly consider as a model. the one between North and South Korea, better known as the Demilitarized Zone or the DMZ. And Kelly says, I recently toured the DMZ, and after kicking the tires and a few tank traps on this baby, I don't think Trump could do better if he's serious about building a perfect seal along the border. And he draws you in with the history. DMZ was built in 53 to separate the combatants, and it is a highly militarized, demilitarized zone. He says this makes the DMZ the gold standard of impermeable membranes. Unlike the United States' leaky southern border, the only living creatures that sneak across the DMZ are the occasional North Korean agents. The good news for Trump is that we have a jump start on building our own DMZ on the 2,000-mile Mexican border because we've already built 700 miles of 18-foot-high pedestrian fencing at a cost of $3 million per mile. And he says, well, that 18-foot fence has produced a lot of 19-foot ladders. And he pretty much dares Donald Trump. He says, in short, Mr. Trump, we are well on our way to a Korea-style border. You would just need to finish the job. He says, even more pathetic, that 18-foot fencing has inspired a brisk market in 19-foot ladders. Trump should look at how the DMZ uses lethal tools to keep anyone from getting too close and impose a tax on ladder-building materials to help pay for the wall. And one wrinkle he'd have to work out is that unlike North and South Korea, we are not currently at war with Mexico. Our last war with our southern neighbor ended in 1848 with a peace treaty that established most of the current border. So I take his tongue-in-cheek point. But of course, it won't faze Trump or any of the Republicans. So yesterday, Martin O'Malley, who is running pretty much dead last in the polls for the Democratic presidential nomination, he's the former governor of Maryland, and I think a very interesting figure. I went out to see him speak last night in San Francisco, and I recorded some audio of his speech, and I will get it out in a podcast in the next day or two. I'm intrigued by O'Malley because many of his positions are quite progressive. He's against the death penalty, and he has another, a bunch of other issues that I find appealing. But he came to San Francisco with a kind of tech talk message, fresh from Las Vegas, where he had staged a press conference outside the Trump Hotel, which is the only non-union casino hotel in Las Vegas. And O'Malley stood and supported the workers at the Trump Hotel who were trying to organize a union. And I think his comments were on target. I think he scored a few political points. But he also earned the wrath of the Donald, who was on TV with a town hall from New Hampshire last night, and then he gave a TV interview, and he's just trashing everybody in sight. So when the interviewer asked him about O'Malley staging this press conference at his hotel in Las Vegas, Trump just smacked him, saying, well, he's only got 1% in the poll. He's trying to get attention. My hotel, by the way, looked beautiful. So we'll see how all that plays out. The austerity deal for Greece is now sealed. German lawmakers overwhelmingly approved the latest bailout deal for Greece. And as you know, what this means is that the bankers are sure that they'll get paid. The Greek people, not so much. Because these bailout funds flow from the banks, the International Monetary Fund, into Egyptian coffers just long enough to be paid out to the bondholders and other debt holders of the Greeks. And so this is a pathetic process. And it's been compounded now by the decision by Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras to resign and call new elections on September 20th. Now, he's in an awkward position because he ran for office and was elected just last year as an opponent of austerity. And after initially bucking it, he backed down, and he rammed through all of the draconian terms insisted on by the German and European banking interests. So his personal popularity appears to be still pretty strong, but it's not clear whether he can win this snap election that he is calling for September 20th. And already the vultures are not only circling, they are feeding on Greece. A German transport company is moving ahead with buying the rights to operate 14 regional airports in Greece. Yes, the Greek government is submitting to privatization deals as part of the bailout and austerity program. The company that runs the Frankfurt Airport, Fraport AG, is set to buy rights to the airports for 40 years in an agreement worth about $1.37 billion. And this kind of pillaging of public property. I mean, obviously, the people of Greece owned their airports. But they've been forced to sell them off. And, of course, the profits will be extracted, and the Greek people will pay even more to use their own airports in the future. It's just criminal. And if you're one of my listeners in Puerto Rico, or you care about Puerto Rico, these kinds of measures will be imposed there in the next few years, I predict. Every day I like to pause and thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. And lately, I've been digging into my records here to honor some of our annual subscribers who only get a mention once a year when they renew. So people like Aaron Spratt, Robert Mayer, Bob Payne, and Robert Byrd, they're all annual subscribers who don't get enough credit for supporting me. So thank you, Bob and Bob and Bob and Aaron. And if I didn't mention your name, I mean three Bobs, that's that's limiting. I want to invite you to become a subscriber. You know the drill. Go to peterbcollins.com, click the sign-up link. Next page, you choose 5, 10, 20. You can make a one-time contribution. You can sign up for the annual deal. And annual subscribers, new ones, earn my bonus gift, the ebook edition of Pepe Escobar's Empire of Chaos. I want to start to let you know that a week from today, I am going to be taking off for a three-week break. I have some international travel planned, and I'd love to tell you all about it, but I've decided that it's safer just to tell you where I went when I get back. So I hope you can live with that suspense, but we will be taking a break for 3 weeks starting on August 28th. I've been telling you about the wildfires that have been raging in California. We have a 3-year drought that has produced bone-dry conditions. And I'm happy to report that the latest fire in Lake County, just north of us here, is largely under control. And the air quality has improved drastically. We're not breathing all of that smoke on a daily basis, at least not in the Bay Area. There's still many fires raging in California and Washington State is having serious problems as well, and three firefighters were killed, and four others were critically injured. Four were injured, one critically, as raging wildfires advanced on towns in north-central Washington. And the towns of Twisp and Winthrop on the Methow River have been evacuated as a complex of fires covers now about 50 square miles. And there is a new study from Columbia University that says pretty definitively that global warming has most likely intensified the drought in California by at least 15% to 20%. I'm not exactly sure how that is quantified, but the scientists say that future dry spells in the state are almost certain to be worse than this one as the world continues to heat up. And even though the findings suggest that the drought is primarily a consequence of natural climate variability, they add that the likelihood of any drought becoming acute is rising because of climate change. A. Park Williams at Columbia University, lead author of the paper, says, "This would be a drought no matter what. It would be a fairly bad drought no matter what. But it's definitely made worse by global warming." Here in California, it's a little early to celebrate anything. But you may have heard a month ago I was bashing the Senate for failing to raise the gasoline tax to pay for highway repairs and infrastructure repairs. And the Senate whiffed. They didn't do it. They just patched together a short-term bill and kicked that can down the road. And here in California, we have an estimated $60 or $70 billion in unattended repairs to bridges, highways, and other infrastructure. And I'm glad to see that Governor Brown he's called a special session of the legislature, and one of the items on the agenda is to come up with a way to beef up the fund for road repairs. Now, Governor Moonbeam is saying that he's not going to try to impose a deal. He wants the Republicans and Democrats in the legislature to work it out. Now, in both houses, the Democrats only need a couple of Republican votes to consider these measures, but to impose a tax increase takes a two-third vote. And so they don't have complete majorities, and that means that Republican votes will be required. Jim Bell, the state senator from San Jose, who's a pretty good guy, he is proposing to increase the gas tax by 2 cents a gallon, adding a dime to the tax on diesel, and raising some of the fees for vehicle license renewals. And I'm in favor of all of these. I think, in fact, the 2 cent increase on the gasoline tax is way too low. And I also think we should be charging a percentage like sales tax instead of pegging it to the gallon, because fuel-efficient cars and hybrids have actually, you know, driven down the sales of energy by volume. So the number of gallons of gasoline declines, and then the tax revenues decline. So I am hopeful that this session will produce a resolution. I'm encouraging the legislature to raise the gasoline tax, as I say, more than 2 cents, and don't make it a per gallon charge. You've got to fix that. Well, there's a lot of attention being paid to Jared Fogle, the now former Subway pitchman, who admitted guilt and is going to pay some restitution to 14 underage victims that he paid for sex acts. He also has pled guilty to receiving child pornography. And in this case, Fogle knows that the kiddie porn that he received was made by a friend of his who served on some foundation that Fogle set up. Now, ordinarily, I don't cover issues like this. I think it's a local case. It's just notorious because he is well known as the TV pitchman for Subway. He lost 200 pounds eating their food, or that's what he claimed. But my issue here is a complicated one. I have for a long time objected to the draconian mandatory sentences for possession or distribution of child pornography. And it's not like I think that kiddie porn is a good thing. I just think that the penalties are disproportionate to the crime. And one illustration is a radio friend of mine. I'll just call Bernie because he's working on repairing his reputation. But Bernie just completed a 6.5-year sentence in federal prison. And unlike Jared Fogle, Bernie never had contact with a minor. Never. Fogle has pled guilty to at least 14, and he's paying some guilt money of $100,000 each to the people that he had sex with. But Bernie simply downloaded some child pornography images and then, at the behest of some anonymous woman he was chatting with online, he shared those images with her over the internet. And Bernie got 6.5 years. He didn't have any participation in the production of the child pornography that he viewed and shared. He didn't molest any human being. And yet he was put through quite a ringer and took 2 or 3 years for them to finally press charges against him. And then 6.5 years in federal prison. And Fogle is expected to get a sentence of between 5 and 12.5 years. Now, I rarely advocate for stiffer sentences. I rarely advocate against a defendant. But in this case, I think Fogle is getting off easy. And what he, the fact that he has admitted these things and is paying some damages, in my view, doesn't diminish the penalty that should be imposed by the court. So he will be sentenced, I don't know exactly when, but sometime in the future. And I know there are a lot of people who are very worked up about this. My Facebook page has a lot of posts about it. And it is rare for me to say, but he deserves to be punished more than the range that is being described. Yesterday, I closed the News and Comment podcast with the news about the so-called female Viagra drug called Addye. I don't know how to pronounce it. Well, today, the company that has produced that drug and got the FDA to approve it sold out for 10X. Sprout Pharmaceuticals is being acquired by Valeant Pharmaceuticals for $1 billion in cash. Only $100 million was invested in Sprout since its formation 4 years ago. So a 10X return in 4 years, based mostly on this drug to enhance women's sexual desire. And I told you about the warning from Public Citizen about the side effects of this drug and a prediction that it will likely be recalled. And our listener from Canada, known as Martin, his screen name is Mr. Barbecue. He wrote me yesterday, "I'm a pharmacologist and I still don't know why they don't use this," he's referring to a different drug, "instead of the new medication for the female Viagra." And so he refers me, he's got a Wikipedia link, and I looked up the name of this drug, and I acknowledged in an email to Martin that I appreciated his input here, and I told him I predicted that I would mispronounce the name of this drug that apparently is in development. But fortunately, over at Wikipedia, they have an audio pronunciation guide. So I'm going to let Mr. Wikipedia tell us how to say this.
Bremelanotide.
Wikipedia, can you say that again a little louder?
Bremelanotide.
Okay. What he said. Bremelanotide, formerly known as PT-141, is a peptide drug which is under development by Palatin Technologies as a treatment for female sexual dysfunction. It was originally tested for intranasal administration, but this application was temporarily discontinued in 2008 after concerns were raised over increased blood pressure. Well, when you get aroused, I think your blood pressure does go up, but maybe it went up too much. Anyway, I can't really evaluate this drug, but Martin closes by saying, it also has a quite funky, crazy molecule, and that's coming from a pharmacologist. But I guess only me can see the humor in this. Well, Martin, maybe you can send me a whole book of pharmacological jokes. But you're right. This one is just a little too obscure for a dude like me. Thanks for joining me today for my News and Comment podcast. You're free to share this with absolutely everyone. Put it on Facebook. Tweet it out. I'll be much obliged. And I'm still Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.